This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to Dystopical. Dystopical is a debate and a reflection on what matters to queer women in the community, or at least what we think should matter to queer women in the community. Tonight's show, we are talking about lesbian bed death.
Yeah.
And I am joined by Farine, as always. Hi, Farine.
Good evening, folks.
And also Katie East, who is visiting us all the way from Cairns. Hi, Katie.
Hello, ladies.
And
you've got your sexy voice on, darling.
Oh, I do.
And Katie's a nurse, so I feel like she should be able to give us some, you know, pretty good advice.
And a lesbian.
Oh, yeah, and that too.
Wait, because she's a nurse, she should give us good advice about lesbian bed death?
Well, I'm going to go into the chemical components, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay, great.
Yeah, definitely.
So during the show, you can text us on 0427JOY949. You can Facebook us at Dystopical, D-Y-S-T-O-P-I-C-A-L, or email us at dear.dystopical@gmail.com or dystopical@joy.org.au. Now, this evening, Katie, who used to be a DJ, has put together our playlist.
And the girls don't actually know what's on the playlist, so it should
be
fun.
No, I actually have no idea what I'm about to play, but...
Can I just say that the first song is for my wife, Farine, sitting across from me?
Mwah,
darling. Okay. Darling. All right, I'm intrigued. Here we go.
And welcome back to Dystopical. Thanks for that shout-out, Katie East. I'm looking forward to much, much more for the rest of this evening.
Of talking about sex, Farine.
As always. So, a happy Women's Day to everyone out there. I hope that you, Katie, did something to celebrate your womanness today.
By the Baileys.
Your womanness.
I had a drink to celebrate not only International Women's Day, but the end of my graduate year. But, I've been celebrating being a woman today. By being a woman.
Great.
Yeah.
That sounds really easy.
Sometimes yeah. It is. Sometimes.
I totally did that too.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh my God, we're so in sync.
I was just like,
do you feel like we should be, you know, doing something like rallying or marching or burning bras on a day like this?
I just bought new bras and I spent about $400 on new bras, so there's no way I'm burning them.
That would actually just be ridiculous. I actually feel, though, that by talking about lesbian bed death, and actually, let me correct that, the myth of lesbian bed death, that we are doing something important for Women's Day, because spurious as this concept is, it's really taken hold. Everyone knows about it. Even my brothers know about it. And
my mum now knows about it. I called her today and tried to explain the concept of why I would be on the radio talking about sex. So hi, Mum.
So, Kat, for those not enlightened, what is lesbian bed death? What's this myth?
Well, for those of you, who, all five of you that might be listening that don't know what lesbian bed death is.
Or haven't come out yet.
It's a term that was coined by... A University of Washington sociologist in 1983.
Pepper.
Her name was Pepper Schwartz. Now, according to her and her research, lesbian couples in committed relationships have less sex than any other type of couple, and they generally experience less sexual intimacy the longer the relationship lasts. Now, this study has been criticized a lot.
As has every study ever studied.
Yeah, however... Regardless of that, the term has really taken hold, like we're all aware of it.
It has, yes.
Katie, tell me, what's your understanding of lesbian bed death?
Look, I am one of those true believers, we're rare out there, that believe that the honeymoon period, which is also another phrase and another show, could extend to the entire relationship and that you can happily have a great sex life and be in love and continue to have a great sex life and be in love for the entirety of your relationship. Unfortunately,
what, is this only if your relationship's really short?
Hold on. Okay, so there's a
or catch. You're with Katie.
There's a catch. Yeah, pretty much. There's a catch to this is that I am not currently in a relationship, and I've been in quite a few of them. Obviously, I haven't quite found the right one in which to experience non-lesbian bed death. Because eventually, it's not that it comes, it's not that I believe in lesbian bed death, but I believe that, when you're not meant to be sleeping with somebody, you stop. and sometimes just so stay in that about, relationship.
So that's not about bed death. That's about the death of the relationship.
The death of the relationship.
As symbolized
that's
by
right.
the lack of sex.
Which I'm going to back up chemically later on. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the lack of sex, lack of communication, lack of fondling, you know, all of those things.
So I feel like for the people that are listening that we should talk a little bit more about the study where this all originated.
Bloody Pepper.
Well, look, okay, I'm happy to do that because I was the one that wanted to talk about this in the first place.
This is true.
So it's all about they concluded that they – so, sorry, she actually did a study with a man was a co-researcher.
And it wasn't just about lesbians, her studies. It was all types of couples.
Her study was about relationships between couples.
American couples.
So so heterosexual relationships, gay male relationships, and also lesbian relationships.
And it was published in 1983, so we're going
back
a bit.
That's right. Yep. But the question was, about how often during the last year have you and your partner had sex relationships? Sex relations. And the lesbian participants signified a lot less sexual activity than everybody else. So the actual stats were that about
shocking.
Only a third of lesbians in relationships of 2 years or longer had sex, in inverted commas, once a week or more. 47% of lesbians in long-term relationships had sex once a month or less. And among heterosexual married couples, only 15% had sex once a week or less. They also reported, and listen to this, that lesbians seem to be more limited in the range of their sexual techniques than other couples, and that lesbian couples are less sexual as couples and as individuals than anyone else.
Can I just say something
here?
Yeah, it is devastating. I'm just going to put it out there that maybe Aussies are just better in bed than Americans. Like,
it's possible. It's possible.
And Americans aren't, you know.
But then, listen, there was also, you know, tons of problems that were pointed out with this study. One, that the focus was on penile and vaginal sex, and therefore there wasn't that much of that happening between lesbians. Surprise, surprise.
Oh, y'all get down to define what is sex between lesbians.
But also that other studies have found that though lesbians might not have that penile vaginal sex, they have more what's called good quality sex, as in full body sexual contact.
I like to call it amazing.
Rather than something that's sort of focused on genital to genital action, less preoccupation with achieving orgasm, blah, 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 more communication, and therefore...
sex and then talking about it afterwards.
Look, I feel like it's worth pointing out that in terms of the parameters of the study, they didn't define what sex was very well. So when they asked people if they'd had sex, by which they meant penetrative sex, obviously lesbians were going to report lower levels of that anyway. I mean, I'm not saying that lesbians don't have penetrative sex.
But there is a lot there is a lot of lesbians out there that don't have penetrative sex.
But it's still sex.
It is.
But in terms of the question that was
being
asked...
What do you call sex, Kat?
That's another story for another show. But in terms of the question that was being asked in the study, obviously that if they were referring to penetrative sex, they were going to get like lower levels recorded.
Unless they slipped.
What?
I'm turning your mic down. So there's, okay.
So there's faults in the study.
Of course, there's lots of faults in the study. And lots of studies since have proven things differently, but for some reason, like, you know, it's got a pretty great name, lesbian bed death. Like, it sounds extreme. Of course, it's taken hold.
So we know a few couples. Well, I know a few couples that have been in long-term relationships. Do you think that the spark's still alive in their relationships from an outside perspective?
Look, the reality is that it goes both ways.
Mm.
Like, sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. I've been in relationships with women where it kind of, you know, goes away after a while, but I've also been in long-term relationships with men in the past where it goes away
or just isn't there,
or yeah, well, in my case perhaps, but you know, I don't think, and that
so
it's,
are you
it's
saying it's inevitable that bed death happens?
I think it should be renamed couple bed death, not lesbian bed death.
No, I think we should actually just get rid of the term bed death.
Okay.
Because it sounds so horrible.
It does sound horrible. Like,
you have other stuff on your mind after a
something
while.
That's dead cannot. Well, as a nurse, it can be brought back to life, but something that's dead, like it's an awful. What are we going to call it, Kat and Fareen? Lesbian bed adventures.
The great bed adventures of the lesbian.
I don't know. Maybe it's just like a sexual relationship dip.
Hurdle.
Hurdle.
It's a hurdle.
Obstacle.
Obstacle,
and
yeah.
Hurdles what is it? And obstacles are something.
Well, long-term relationships
over.
Are marathons, I suppose, and you've got to, you know, find ways to keep feeding it, to keep it alive, to keep running that distance. I don't even know
you
why
need to
I'm
find
using
the power aid for
know
your relationship.
I don't even know
why I'm running analogies
true,
here.
Though. I'm with you. It's a long haul.
I don't
sometimes.
Even know where to go with your metaphors.
Not
right
just
now.
A U-haul is in a short-term relationship. It's a long haul in a long-term relationship.
Long haul in a U-haul.
Ah, wow. That's a lot of hauling going on. No wonder you're exhausted.
I'm starting to feel really tired too, so I'm going to cut to a track right now.
Okay, so this is a International Women's Day. It is. This is one of my beautiful friends, Leah Evan, who is an amazing Australian artist. This is the debut track off her first album, which was Come and Find Me, and the album's called Come and Find Me. Please support her. She is amazing, and I love her.
So, Katie, as a nurse, I believe you are about to tell us about the chemistry of sex.
The
and
chemistry.
For those of you that have just tuned in, we are talking about the myth, and let me just say that again,
myth.
The myth of lesbian bed death tonight.
Okay, chemistry-wise. Okay, so chemistry-wise. So there's three stages of chemistry in a relationship from what I've done a bit of research on, and I actually agree with the research, which is a new concept. So when we're in a relationship, we have this awesome thing. It can happen in the first 6 months, it can happen within the first 2 years, it can happen within what is coined as the honeymoon phase. It's a love chemical.
Is this the chocolate chemical?
Yes, it's the chocolate chemical. It's phenethylamine, which is a chemical that basically it speeds up the flow of information between your nerve cells, and you kind of feel awesome on it. There's really no other way to describe it. You feel great. You feel like you're on top of the world.
Feel like having sex.
You feel like having a lot of sex. It gives you that whole euphoria, energized, floaty feeling. It's the chemical that's released that can make you have sex all night long and then go to work the next day and then all night long again the next night.
Oh,
you know,
I remember that.
Remember
one.
That one? You know, when you go to work and you're just sitting there just going, oh my God, I've had an hour and a half sleep. Ow. And I can't wait to do it again. But it also works in combination with two other chemicals, which is dopamine and norepinephrine. Dopamine basically makes you feel good, and norepinephrine is the big one that stimulates the it's kind of like a fight or flight chemical. It stimulates your production of adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And these two chemicals are actually chemical cousins of amphetamines.
Mm.
Therefore, love is a drug, girls.
So, Katie, what does that mean? You know, sometimes you hook up with someone and you have sex a few times and then
my mum's going to love this show.
And then you're not really that into it anymore. What does that say about
you're a love junkie.
Oh, tell
okay.
us more about this.
All right. So basically there's people out there that crave for that chemical love that I've just described to you in those three chemicals.
I read about that in Cosmo last week.
Oh, my God, you read Cosmo.
I can't believe you just
said that. At the doctor's office. Whatever. You're loud.
And I'd like to just say, Bin, you were right. She is a dork. So love junkies search for the high. An interesting fact for you, ladies.
Mm-hmm.
3% of mammals are actually monogamous. 3% of mammals.
And which ones?
Well,
penguins. Dolphins?
I don't actually know, but I can tell you within that 3%. In that 3%, humans are not one of those 3%.
Really?
So, yeah.
We're not categorized as monogamous creatures.
No,
animals.
We're not.
By whom?
By a study that I read, which...
it must be true, then.
Well, we can argue about it, you know. So that's the start of the relationship, and then you get into a relationship and then your honeymoon period kind of phases us off a little bit, and then we go into the part of the relationship that has endorphins. And in relationship studies, these are called the attachment period, where you're attached with somebody.
Where does this happen? Because I've known many.
Is this after the honeymoon
period? Yeah, this is when you're out of the honeymoon period. And
Which can last up to 2 years.
According to the studies, which are debatable. Okay, so you've got your three chemicals in the first part, and then you get into the endorphin stage, which is basically endorphins are released that are they're morphine-like opiates, so they're highly addictive. I'm going to throw a few words out there and you're going to know what I'm talking about. Calmness in a relationship. Reassurance that relationship provides.
I'm sorry, does this apply to lesbian relationships?
Some of them.
Sorry, please continue.
Let's not have an awkward silence. Dependability and warmth within a relationship.
I like that phase too.
Yeah, I'm a fan. It's basically, it's not as exciting as a PEA. Or as the PEA stage, because you're so in the PEA. That's the only way I could describe that. But being a morphine-like opiate, the release of the endorphins, it's actually more addictive this stage.
Right.
So you've got your love junkies in the first stage, but, you know, this is the addictive part. This is where when people experience the myth of lesbian bed death or lesbian bed adversity or excitement or whatever we decided
lesbian
to call it.
What was it? Bed adversity. I like that. Bed challenge.
This is why they won't actually leave a relationship, I believe, is because these chemicals or these endorphins are being released where they've got the calm and the security and the reassurance and they're dependent upon the other person, where they won't actually leave the relationship because they're so used to having that go on for them.
And do you think that's a particularly female trait?
I was about to ask that too.
Yeah. That whole, like, the whole need for, you know, comfort and support and dependence and trust.
Let's talk about our emotions and how we feel.
And do you think that's stronger with women and that's why they might stay in relationships longer even when the sex isn't good?
Look, a lot of straight people, and I do talk to a lot of straight people, a lot of straight people I've spoken to about relationships do believe that, you know, sometimes it's easier to be with a guy because they don't want to talk about their emotions and things like that. And obviously when
I've got my hand up right now.
Both hands. And obviously if you're in a lesbian relationship, we all know that there's a lot of talking. There's a lot of talking about feelings, you know, and communication. And I'm a big believer in if the communication breaks down, the relationship's going to break down. And that's just where I stand on it. It may not necessarily be how everybody else agrees, but that's where I stand on it. Another interesting note while we're on chemicals is oxytocin.
Now, I know about oxytocin. This is the cuddle drug.
It is the cuddle drug.
Ooh, tell us more about the cuddle drug.
Kat's read my notes.
No, I actually already know about it.
Okay, the cuddle drug. Oxytocin is released. It can be released from physical cues as well. Like, it doesn't just have to be a cuddle. It can be from a voice. So if I'm currently sleeping with someone at the moment and they can hear my voice on radio, they may be getting an oxytocin release. Right now.
You wish.
Yep. And it can be done by a look or a touch, which is the physical cues. Basically,
I prefer cuddles.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Basically, it's a sexual arousal hormone. It signals an orgasm. It like kind of...
I'm sorry, but when I first read about oxytocin, I read that it was about like the baby mother bonding.
Oh, okay. So you can go into the that's the other side of things that I was trying to avoid. Yeah, there's findings, there's studies again that believe that some of these chemicals are actually only released when you meet somebody. You know how you crave for that comfort and security and all of that kind of stuff. But there's no chemistry when you find that person. And there's some studies that show that you actually only find that chemistry, that love chemistry that we're speaking about, if you meet somebody that can resolve something from your childhood or bring you back to something, you know, from your mother or your father that reminds you of them, you know, which really...
Does it sound really Freudian?
...freaks me out. It does sound really Freudian. But, yeah, along those lines of things. However,
but with hormones involved.
Yeah. Well, they're women. Where women are, there's hormones, brain, unfortunately. It's just the way of the world. I would like to go into another song now, if that's okay, ladies.
That would please. Be
we're going to go into song number 6 on my famous mix, which is actually I'm going to support.
Thanks for telling me the number so I could press.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna support Pink here. I think she does a lot for women and positive attitudes and
muscles.
Yeah,
muscles. Eye candy.
And seriously, that woman looks good. Tainted and pregnant, but she still looks good.
And it is International Women's Day.
It is International Women's Day. And also, may I throw in that this song is featuring Peaches, who basically is the one woman on earth that I know wants to sleep with me.
Oxytocin release coming on here.
Oh,
for
I can
Katie.
Feel it.
All right,
she
here
can
we go.
Feel it too.
And welcome back to Dystopical. Nice timing.
Just made it
there.
In the door.
Tonight we're talking about the myth. The myth. Of lesbian bed death on International Women's
lesbian
Day.
Lesbian bed adversity.
And as always, we'd love to hear what you have to say, what your opinions are, what your experiences are, and what keeps the spark alive for you. Oh, and also, we're giving away a CD. It's a Kaki King CD, and I love her, in celebration of Three Chords and the Truth. So that is up for grabs for anyone who is a Joy member. Just send us a text at 0427JOY949 or email us at dystopical@joy.org.au to grab this prize.
Can I just give props to the music there? That was Ooh La La by Goldfrapp. God, she's hot. And before that, it was obviously called Oh My God, as Pink kept saying over and over again to Peaches, and Peaches will one day say to me, Oh My God.
I'm totally sure that's going to happen.
It will.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting it out there.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about
sex.
Had a baby. Fareen cut it up one time.
Indeed. So folks, this is the section where we usually try and be more positive about the issue that we're discussing and, you know, what are things that you can do to change the adversities that you might have around the challenges.
Lesbian bed challenges.
Around lesbian bed challenge.
It sounds like an obstacle course.
I thought that's what sex was supposed to be.
What
like.
Is it? I'm running the lesbian decathlon in my relationship.
So, Katie.
Does everyone have orange witch's hats in their
next to the bed.
Katie Cat.
I love how you always cross to me first to fix it.
Give us your tips.
All right.
You seem more effective in these kind of situations.
Okay. I'm a big believer, like, to the ladies out there, I'm a bit of a romantic.
Ew.
Yeah, you're not. I'm a true believer in romance and keeping the spark alive. And I think that it's essential not only to make dates with your partner when you're in a relationship, but to make dirty, filthy, stinking sex dates. Hi, Mom. I know you're going to love this show. sex dates with your partner, I think, is a really big thing. It's something I think that each person needs to take responsibility. You are responsible for your own orgasm. Like,
I agree.
I said that pointing at Farina. I don't know why. But
is there something you guys want to tell me?
No.
Not at all.
She's my wife, but not like
no,
that.
No.
I think that each individual in the relationship is responsible for their own orgasm, and they should be able to express to their partner what gets them off.
And that brings me to the point that people are also responsible for knowing their own bodies.
Yeah, I completely agree with you here.
So I think that, you know, do yourself a favour and your partner a favour.
Get in there.
By getting to know how you work.
This is true. This is true. And exploring and experimenting and, you know, one may say putting yourself out there to learn from older women such as myself or
just putting it out there.
Can you not sleaze on air, please? Still family hour.
Katie is invited onto our show just to get dates. Helping a friend out
I
here.
I am not. I don't need any help. Thank you. Let's talk about something that's near and dear to all of us, fantasies in the bedroom. Do you believe that they help with lesbian bed death?
Well, yes, of course.
Oh, I'm sitting next to two nannas here. We just went,
I just had that moment where I was like, do I really want to talk about these things?
You don't have to tell us your fantasies, but do you think...
But do, please.
No, we've already actually discussed that on another show.
Do you believe that fantasies in the bedroom can help, like, or bringing the fantasy element into it? Like, you know, you may be sick of each other because you've been together for 6 years, so let's pretend we're somebody else. You know, that's one fantasy that you can play. There's so many out there, but that's one fantasy that you can play down the lines of.
I agree. I think fantasy can be really important, and it's very important not to take it personally.
Like, yeah.
As in, just because someone happens to have a thing for, you know, dirty schoolgirls doesn't mean just because you're not a dirty schoolgirl that you're inadequate somehow. Like, people have
very
fantasies
much so.
For all sorts of reasons.
And don't get tense every time you drive past somebody in a school uniform from then on. You're like, oh, my God, you're looking at her and not at me. Schoolgirls is a really bad example that we're using on air. But
you know, I have a sort of different perspective on this.
Okay.
I don't think that lesbian bed death is actually about what's going on in bed. I think it has a lot to do with what's going on outside of the bedroom.
Yep.
And what's going on or not going on inside the bedroom is a sign of the health of the relationship in general.
I completely agree with you, friend. Like, I admit I am an awful person to date at the moment because I do shift work. I'm a nurse. And not only am I a nurse, I'm an emergency nurse.
Yeah.
So I get home from work, I'm exhausted. I don't have a lot to give somebody when I get home. You know, I'm doing night duties. I'm an awful person. Kat, whenever I call Kat after I've done a stint of night duties, I'm told that I have to eat toast or have something before I call because apparently I'm grumpy.
Yeah, I actually can't speak to you.
Yeah, nobody can. Yeah, nobody can.
So there's the inevitable work, you know, sort of taking a
the toll
on your
the
life.
Relationship, yeah.
There's other things. I don't know, I guess at early stages in the relationship, and it might not be as much about economics, but I think later on, you know, couples fight about money all the time.
What about also the fact that sometimes in relationships we let ourselves go?
Uh-huh.
I've never done that.
Sorry.
But everyone in the world besides Kat lets themselves go a little bit.
Letting ourselves go and also getting lost in a relationship. Like, you know, that's got a big thing to do with it. When that person, when you're craving those endorphins that I spoke about before, you know, the morphine of the relationship, you're losing contact with friends outside of the relationship. You're becoming not I, you're becoming the we.
Yeah, and lesbians do this a lot.
The we statement.
I've seen it a lot in lesbian relationships and it's placing so much expectation on a partner to give you everything that you need.
Yes.
Whereas you were a complete person when you met that person.
Before even you met that person.
And,
and you will continue to be complete. Yeah.
I think that we need to make ourselves happy before we can really.
And
make
I think the taking
else
someone else for granted thing is once you're in a relationship or you're promised to be together or you're committed, all of a sudden there's this sort of feeling of reliance that they will do this for you or they will do that for you. And that sort of accumulates and it kills the romance of being with someone and doing something to surprise someone because you already do so many things for them already. So I think the not taking someone for granted thing, you know, the element of surprise is always a lovely thing.
I agree. I agree, which brings us back to making the dates. They don't just have to be sex dates. They can be any dates.
Exactly. I'm a really big fan of date night.
Oh, I love date night.
But what about when you miss, you know, the spontaneity? You know, when you're walking down the street and you just suddenly have to stop and have sex in an alleyway. Like,
okay, so just for those of you listening at home, Farine and I just looked at each other.
And went, okay, well, that might happen to you a lot, but it's not an experience I generally share.
Okay, let's just call it spontaneity.
Okay.
What about if you're missing the spontaneity? You know, that overwhelming desire that I just have to do
puck
this
that
with you
person.
Now.
Good. Very creative. Thank you very much.
Yes, we have 10 minutes till we're allowed to use the other word.
How do you get that spontaneity back?
Can you?
Eat chocolate. Eat chocolate, it releases the PEA.
And if this is supposedly normal evolutions of a relationship, then perhaps you don't get all that amazing, you know, new chemistry back.
But perhaps
later.
Perhaps you trade it for other things.
I believe that it's possible to fall back in love with the same person, though.
I know it's
possible.
Tell
us your theory. How?
Look, I think that you need to rediscover why it is that you actually fell in love with that person. Like, I think that having you time is really important. Mm. Taking yourself away from the relationship, not necessarily breaking up or anything like that, but taking yourself away, making sure that you've got that time where you can then go back to the person and go, oh my God, I missed you. I think that I miss you bit. Like, I love the I miss you bit.
I'm pointing at Katie right
now. She is pointing at me
harshly. You are correct.
It's true. Like, you know, I live in Cairns and sometimes I see women in Melbourne, and that I miss you thing, like, it really, I love it. Like,
yet
I
having love that your feeling. Own independent
yeah.
life.
Yeah, having my own independent life is really.
Missing someone is really quite an amazing thing.
It is, because it brings up so many emotions. Like, you know, you miss them so much that it hurts, or you miss them so much that when you hear their voice, it makes you giggle and laugh like a schoolgirl, kind of back to the schoolgirl. figure eight, Kat.
I hope Sal's listening to that.
And you know, I think missing is really, really important. I think we're going to cut to a very quick song now. Is that right, girls?
We certainly are.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.